All right, would you call this case, please?
The court will now call Wilton Shell Carter, Jr. versus the state of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Justin Sparks will argue for the appellant. Mr. James Gibson will argue for the state.
Okay. Justin, you ready?
I am.
All right.
May it please the court. My name is Justin Sparks. I represent the appellant Wilkie Shell Collier in this cause. I'm going to continue the theme of the day. This is my first oral argument as well. It's an honor to be up here, and I really appreciate you.
I hear it's Gibson's too, so.
I told him to try to pull that one off too. This case we have here is about a juror who is a Desert Storm veteran who was selected to be on the jury, who took an oath to follow the law and the evidence and base his verdict on the law and the evidence, ends up on a jury, begins deliberations, and two things happen. One, a giant weather storm comes into Tarrant County, enough to the effect where most of the jurors in there have messages on their cell phones.
What are they doing with cell phones in the jury room?
I agree completely, Your Honor. They get an opportunity to check their cell phones and check their messages with loved ones worried about them. The second influence is a particular juror receives a phone call from his doctor who says his daughter has just tested positive for MSRA. He is the lone holdout in the deliberations. He's the only juror that is voting not guilty at this point. After learning this from the doctor, he immediately changes his mind and says, you know what, guilty, let's go in there. Based his verdict solely on trying to get out of that courthouse as soon as he possibly could. Now, this revolves around the oath that these jurors take to base their verdict on the law and the evidence.
Well, I've got a question. Is it still the law that you can't communicate with jurors during deliberation, or that jurors aren't allowed to communicate with anybody during deliberation?
As far as I know, you are not allowed to communicate with regards to the case at hand.
So you can communicate about other things except through the bailiff?
I think what should have been done is a break in the deliberations, and then the jurors be allowed to call their families and tell them they're okay or they have a ride home. But that's not what we have in the record before us. The record before us is while they were deliberating, they had their cell phones in there. Now, what was brought up in the appellee's brief is, first, what is admissible on the hearing for the motion for new trial? Now, according to Texas Rules of Evidence 606, we cannot have testimony about the jurors' deliberations. The one exception to that, however, is whether or not there was some sort of outside influence that influenced the verdict and actually materially changed the verdict. Now, in this hearing, the state properly objected, and the trial judge actually ruled on the objection and said, you cannot get into jury deliberations. However, you may get into outside influences. I think bringing up a point of error that we cannot consider what was in there is somewhat premature and more an issue for a cross appeal if we're going to argue whether or not what was in front of the judge was allowed to be considered, because the judge made a ruling and in fact considered the outside influence. Now, this is an incredibly rare issue. Texas Rules of Evidence 606 is only 14 years old. There's not a whole lot of case law on what is an outside influence. I think that's for several reasons, one of which is it's incredibly rare to have a verdict come out, a juror come up here and willingly take a witness stand and testify to the same judge that they sat through a trial with and essentially tell that judge, I did not follow the instructions that you gave me. I ignored those instructions, and I made my own decision for my own personal reason, and it was because it was something that happened outside of this courtroom. I think that is incredibly rare, and that's part of the reason why there's not a whole lot of case law on this issue. I think it is not something that can be addressed during jury selection. Jury selection is more for a bias or a prejudice, whether or not someone will hold the Fifth Amendment against somebody if they don't get up there and testify. That is something that can be foreseen and can be addressed and can be headed off. If we have a potential juror who can't ignore the Fifth Amendment, well, then they don't qualify. That can be headed off because it's foreseeable that that might become an issue in a case. It is not foreseeable that a juror would be able to check his messages during deliberations and receive a phone call from a doctor saying his daughter has MSRA. I would also like to note the importance of this juror being a Desert Storm veteran is prior, and this is in the testimony at the motion for new trial, prior to his service, he received a shot for anthrax. One of the side effects is abscess all over his body, the same abscess that his daughter developed, which is the abscess that tested positive for the MSRA. So he testified in the motion for new trial that that in fact did have a mental impact on him and affected his verdict. He felt somewhat responsible for his doctor, for his daughter testing positive. Not only did he testify that it was an outside influence, but he also testified that that is exactly why he changed his verdict. And then he took an additional extra step and said, I still to this day do not feel like the state proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, that's why I guess the discussion of outside influence, I mean, if you look at the Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 21.3C, it says the defendant must be granted a new trial when the verdict has been decided by lot or in any manner other than a fair expression of the juror's opinion. Whether the other jurors were influenced by any outside influence is speculative. He knows whether he was influenced by outside factors, and he testified that he was, and that the verdict was not a fair expression of his opinion. So why doesn't, could the inquiry just stop there?
I believe in this case it could. I believe that his outside influence alone is enough. I don't think we need both the weather and him and his influence alone. I would argue that both, the combination of the two certainly is, but his outside alone is alone enough, and the defendant in this case has a right to six individual verdicts. If five vote one way and one votes the other, then it ends up in a mistrial or a hung jury, and that's the defendant's right. Having a verdict change due to an outside influence, something that, according to Golden Eagle Archery versus Jackson, an outside influence originates from sources other than the jurors themselves. Clearly, this was outside the trial. This was outside the jury room. I don't think there's any disagreement about that. But it clearly affected the jury and this juror in the way he voted. I would also like to point out a decent analogy would be an engineer being on a jury and an engineer coming in there saying, I'm an engineer, here's my background, here's my experience, here's why I don't think that evidence is good evidence and I don't believe it and I give it no credibility. That's not an outside influence. He's in that jury room, he's the one that's an engineer. However, if his brother or sister is on the jury and they take a break and they call him up and say, what do you think about this? What's your opinion as an engineer? And he tells them, well, no, I don't believe any of that. That's not credible. Then that becomes an outside influence. And it's something that originates outside of that jury room. Now, I would also like to point out at the end of the motion when the witness, the juror, was passed to the state, they in fact asked for a continuance in order to investigate and verify any phone records of any phone calls that were made during the deliberations, and the judge denied the motion for continuance and then immediately denied the motion for new trial. I would submit to the court that the state looks as though that they were trying to verify this as well, which did these, was this in fact an outside influence? quite frankly, I think in 1998 when we added the 606 under the Texas Rules of Evidence, it put somewhat of a check and balance on jury verdicts, not getting into their deliberations. However, if there is some sort of outside influence that gets into that jury room, then we need to know about it, because our system revolves around what they do. One factor that prosecutors take into account when they make offers is what a jury might do. When what a jury might do is invaded, that defeats the whole purpose of what we do. That defeats the whole purpose of this judicial system. I think we have two outside influences here, and I think there is a check and balance in place, and I think it does apply. Quite frankly, if this is not an outside influence, then I'm not sure exactly what is.
If we're to take what you say as accurate, and that is that, that Mr. Aguilera was the only holdout and everybody else was voting guilty, then even if they were influenced by, even if they were concerned about the weather, they didn't change their vote. They stuck with their vote. He's the only one that changed it. So to me, that's, I don't even know why we're going down that trail. They didn't change anything. They didn't succumb to any outside influence. They may have been concerned about the weather, but they still voted guilty and had, even before that became an influence.
I would agree with you completely. They did not change their verdict at all. They were guilty the whole way. It did not affect how they voted. It did affect how one of them voted. That vote is the cause for this verdict. Otherwise, it's a majority verdict, not a unanimous verdict, which is required. I have completed my argument. If you have any other questions, I'm more than happy to stay up there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justice.
Jim?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court. Let me begin with kind of a discussion of the procedural aspect of this, because Mr. Sparks got into it a little bit. Our position with regard to the evidence that's disallowed by 606B is pretty simple, and it's this. It's that impeaching the jury verdict can't rest on evidence that's disallowed by 606B. Now, in the process of that, the court is going to have to hear what kind of evidence or what kind of testimony is going to come up in order to make a ruling one way or the other. Now, it wasn't exactly clear, but it seems that the judge, in deciding this case, probably decided that, I'm not hearing things that would constitute an outside influence under the law. Therefore, under 606B, the things that are, and I think we all agree that the things that Mr. Aguilera testified to were his subjective impressions of what was going on in the jury room, which are specifically disallowed by 606B. With that in mind, let's discuss whether this is a bona fide kind of outside influence that would allow this kind of testimony under the rules. As in our brief, we point out the Solis case, which talks about this, which is a case from Corpus Christi, talks about this kind of thing in detail, that outside influences don't include things that are found out by jurors and communicated to the others. Well, everybody was talking about this weather situation, and this is the weather part of it, not the sick daughter part of it. This kind of goes to the heart of the deliberations, whether you've got an influence that's coming in, and It's not just simply that a juror knows it and now we're all talking about it. And this, all the jurors were talking about the weather. It's, as Mr. Sparks was explaining, they were on their cell phones, they were talking about who parked where. But the fact that they discussed the weather doesn't mean it was an outside influence, even if it made them sort of speed up deliberations, which, as was just discussed, isn't really clear from the record. But in addition, and this goes to the illness of the daughter situation as well, our position is that pressure from work or home or something, or just the everyday pressures of life aren't considered outside influences. And one of the cases we cite is in the 14th Court of Appeals in Kirby Forest, where the jurors apparently felt some pressure to hurry up and reach a verdict so they could return to work. And the court called these, well, normal pressures. And our view is that we have the same situation here. Worries about the weather, for example, even whether there's going to be a tornado, or Mr. Aguilera's concerns about his daughter, even though much more serious, that's still just normal pressures that jurors are going to have to deal with when they decide a case.
So how do you get around Trap Rule 21.3C when Mr. Aguilera testifies that that verdict was caused by the information that he received and was not a fair expression of his opinion?
As I stated at the outset, Your Honor, the only way we can get there, the only way that that can be based on any actual facts, because his conclusion by itself, if he just got up and testified to that, I don't think it would be supportable in any way. He's got to actually, I think that for a motion for new trial to succeed, there's got to be actual facts that back that up. And all the facts that he testifies to that would allow a judge to reach that conclusion under 21.3 are, in our view, disallowed by Rule 606B, because they all go to the heart of what happened at the deliberations and the communications by the different jurors. So I see the problem that a defendant's going to have in proving it, and I also see that there's a slight kind of contradiction, I suppose, maybe not the best way to put it, but I can see that there might be a difficulty in proving that. But in our view, it's just not simply enough to say, this wasn't my vote, or I didn't believe that he was guilty, or whatever, or it wasn't a fair, it wasn't a unanimous verdict. There has to be actual evidence to show that, and all
How
of
did you ever, ever, ever prove that, then? Give me a for instance.
Okay. The defendant's mother walks into the jury room and offers everybody $100 to acquit her son. And at least one of them says, oh, yeah, I was the only one who was going to vote guilty, but now I'll vote not guilty.
How is that any different than what you have here? When he testifies, I received a phone call that told me my daughter had a potentially life-threatening disease, and I changed my vote based on that, and I think he's not guilty.
Because it wasn't the kind of information that would normally sway a juror to vote not guilty versus guilty. It could have swayed in the opposite way. It just so happened that he was thinking not guilty. And that's not, I think we cite the Dallas court in the Roselle case, for the fact that a neutral pressure, which is what this is, a neutral pressure isn't the same thing as an outside influence. I think in that case, the jurors found out that they were going to have to deliberate an extra day, so some of them changed their votes, or there was testimony to that effect. And the court said, well, that's not an outside influence because it didn't actually persuade them one way or the other. It wasn't like somebody saying you should vote guilty or you should vote not guilty. And that, to me, would be the difference. That distinguishes, say, you know, somebody coming in and bribing the jurors, for example. That would clearly be an outside influence. But we just don't think that, you know, excuse me, neither a tornado nor a call from your child's doctor is going to be the kind of thing to influence you one way or the other. That's why our contention is that it's not an outside influence. And again, I see the problem sort of inherent in the whole thing, but it goes to the heart of the matter, that the law is most worried about kind of a nefarious entity trying to throw a verdict in a specific direction. And that sort of brings me to the exact language.
Well,
of the rule.
A quotient verdict isn't nefarious.
I'm sorry?
A quotient verdict isn't nefarious. It's just illegal.
But that wouldn't go. Well, I'm talking about the specific instance of an outside influence.
How would you prove a quotient verdict?
I suppose if you were dumb enough to leave division tables around in the jury room, but
somebody would still have to testify that that was how they reached their verdict.
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't thought about quotient verdicts in a long time.
Why would they
concentrating
have a rule
on the outside
that is impossible to prove?
Well, as far as an outside influence is concerned, I don't think it's impossible to prove, Your Honor.
Where in 21.3 does it say there has to be an outside influence? It simply says the defendant must be granted a new trial for any of the following reasons: when the verdict has been decided by lot or in any manner other than a fair expression of the juror's opinion. I don't see anything in that rule that makes any reference to outside influence.
The issue isn't whether it's required in that rule. The issue is how one is going to prove it. And the judge is under no obligation to believe a juror who walks in and says, you know what, it really wasn't a unanimous verdict, and then walks off and doesn't support it with any facts. And the facts that Mr. Aguilera testifies to in order to support that view, that it wasn't a fair verdict, are specifically, specifically disallowed by 606B, going to the outside influences situation. Which brings me to another point. If the rule speaks of an outside influence improperly brought to bear, and this goes to the idea of the nefarious entity that I mentioned before. I mean, there's no impropriety in a tornado or a phone call from a doctor's office.
During deliberations? Is it how do you communicate with a jury that's deliberating, locked up in the jury room deliberating? Nobody's supposed to communicate with the jury except through the bailiff.
Your Honor, the storm doesn't know that they're deliberating, and neither does the doctor's office.
The people who have those phones in there do.
Well, that's true. The jurors do. But the point is, it's not, it doesn't go to the evil intent of the jurors. It goes to, the rule says improperly brought to bear. I regard that the bearing is on the part of the person who's bringing the outside influence in, not the juror. So in that regard, I don't see how the doctor's office or the storm or anything like that was actually improper. There's nothing improper going on here as far as the outside influence is concerned. So, I mean, whether that medical condition or the storm were outside influences, and, of course, as I already said, we don't think they were, they weren't improperly brought to bear on Mr. Aguilera or any other juror. And again, it's just not the kind of evidence in this case, influence, outside or not, that was meant to throw the verdict in a specific direction. These were just, you know, pressures of life that were coming to bear, and it's not the sort of evidence that would support a finding in a motion for new trial that the verdict was decided in an unfair manner. And with that, the state prays that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Jesse?
May it please the court, I will be brief. I want to make sure and point out that in this case, after they read the verdict, the jury was polled, and Mr. Aguilera's response was, yes, that was my verdict, it was a majority vote. That was when this began. So not only do we have evidence from the motion for new trial and the hearing on it, but we also have evidence from the trial itself where he begins to doubt his verdict, and that's when they investigate as to why he changed his verdict. The procedural issue here is what's admissible at this hearing and what can be considered. The judge made a ruling on that issue saying that we can't get in jury deliberations. We can, however, talk about any outside influences or any exception to 606B that applies. That was ruled on. That's in the record. I think the proper procedure here is a cross appeal. Additionally, the appellee pointed out a case from the 14th Court of Appeals, Kirby Forest Industries versus Kirkland, which is in the appellee's brief. And essentially it talks about whether or not pressure from employers to hurry up and reach a verdict so you can get back to work applies and whether or not that's an outside influence. that is distinguished from what we have here. Getting a call from your doctor that your daughter has MSRA, is about to be hospitalized, is completely different than the everyday pressures of needing to be at work and get your work done, you know, by five every day. I think it's completely distinguishable. Additionally, in that case, the court ruled in the state's favor because a previous affidavit by the juror stated that, no, it was not an outside influence on her verdict. So here, we have a juror that says, yes, it was an outside influence. Yes, it did affect my verdict. I still don't believe the state proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt. And in that case, the juror signed an earlier affidavit saying, no, that did not affect my verdict.
I have a question about your argument about the facts being in the record and the cross appeal. Isn't whether or not something is an outside influence basically a question of law?
I think it can be both law and fact. I think a great example is this case, whether or not the weather can be or a phone call from a doctor can be. I think what's admissible in the hearing is the question of law and whether, and certainly they can't speak upon the deliberations or how they reached the verdict or what weight they give certain evidence and what they believe or did not believe. But I think once we begin talking about what if from outside of that courtroom invaded their territory and affected a verdict, then I think we get into the principles of the oath, the principles of having a fair and impartial jury, deciding a case based on the law and evidence.
The other question I have is, isn't it just as foreseeable or just as likely that Mr. Aguilera could have said, that's it, I got to get out of here, I'm not changing my vote, I'm never changing my vote, I'm voting not guilty, that's my vote for all eternity, it won't do any good to deliberate any further, and I'm out of here. I mean, isn't that just as likely as him changing his vote? And how do you respond to the argument that it didn't influence him, the call from his doctor, however horrific, and the weather didn't influence him one way or the other? That was his own decision, right or wrong. The what happened outside the courtroom didn't cause him to do anything that didn't influence his decision. I can't think of a better way to say it than that.
I think, luckily, Mr. Aguilera was brave enough to come back to that courtroom and testify and go on the record and face the trial judge. And luckily, he testified that, and he was honest, that my verdict was based on getting out of here. I still don't think the state proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't think he ever changed his mind about the evidence. He never says that. What his statement is I voted with the rest of them so I could get out of here. I don't think his mind changed about whether or not the case was proven. And I think that's what applies here. Now, as far as I see my red light is on, I don't think
go ahead,
I addressed
finish your, answering the question.
I don't think I addressed your first question. I think I addressed the second question. Or did I? I apologize.
No, I think you did.
Okay.
If you want to address the second question, if you feel like you did not complete your answer, feel free to complete it.
No, I have. I just wanted to make sure I did.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any questions?
Thank you, Justice.
All right. Thank you. Your case is submitted. We do appreciate your argument. It's very, very interesting issue. And appreciate you being here today. You are excused. And this is our last case for today, so this court will be adjourned.